Wednesday, January 3rd, 2024. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another year, well, and also another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you, and happy New Year, 2024. By the way, how far into the future does 2024 sound? Like, that just sounds completely fake to me at this point. But I hope that you had a very safe New Year's celebration. And, you know, I hope that you enjoyed the last full weekend where we had both college football and NFL games. I know we still have one college football game left, but it's not quite the same. It's a little bit different, and we only have one of those. It's not going to be a weekend full of college football like we have had, and that makes me just a little bit sad. But it was a fun weekend that we had. We had some really good games, both in the NFL and in college. You know, the NFL, I don't know what's going on over there. We are seeing some really odd things happening as we come down the stretch in the National Football League. I don't get it. Like, the Buffalo Bills might be warming up. I'm not sure. They don't look great, but now they've started to win again. A little strange. The Cleveland Browns seem to have revived their season with Joe Flacco at quarterback, which honestly might be one of the weirdest sentences I have uttered in the history of this podcast. The Philadelphia Eagles are struggling big time on both sides of the ball. And once again, the NFL referees have struck one more time. They just can't get out of their own way. If you somehow missed it, in the Dallas Cowboys versus Detroit Lions game on Saturday night, the NFL refs seem to have incorrectly ruled that a Lions offensive tackle failed to report as an eligible receiver. Well, that negated a successful two-point try, which would have given the Lions the late lead. And instead, the Lions lost a really important game, and it could come back to haunt them in the postseason. I mean, instead of getting a higher seed, now you may have to go on the road. And we started to hear it all over social media. Is the NFL fixed? You know, the NFL isn't actually a sports league. It's an entertainment league. This might all just be fixed. The rumors are flying. Hey, the league wants the Cowboys in the playoffs. They don't want the Lions. They don't want the Lions to host a game. They want Dallas to host the game. This is all manipulated. Well, I mean, slow down a little. Did the refs get it wrong? Yeah, it sure seems like they did. Looking at the replay, there's a lot of things that made me think it did. Did the Lions try to get a little too cute by having multiple players report to the ref to try to fool the Cowboys? Yeah, that's also true. Is Detroit Lions head coach Dan Campbell a complete and utter buffoon for continuing to try to go for two when he could have just kicked an extra point and gone to overtime? Yes, 1,000% yes. You know, these coaches, especially in the NFL, that try these dumb two-point conversions when they don't have to, they're just as bad as the refs. And bizarrely, we rarely even give them any heat for it. We're like, hey, he just believed in his guys. No, he's an idiot. Play the percentages. I don't want to hear about, well, you know, 47%. Well, 47% isn't 50. It better be over 50. In fact, it better be over 70 if I'm going to do it when I don't have to. That's dumb. These coaches getting a little too cocky. However, the worst weekend in the National Football League had to belong to those Miami Dolphins. My goodness. Not only did they get a half a hundred hung on them by the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday, but they also lost top pass rusher Bradley Chubb to a blown knee, and it sounds like defensive back Xavien Howard is going to be out for a while with a foot injury too. You know, it is just so sad to see what happens to the Miami Dolphins every single year. Whenever it looks like they just might make a run, something bad seems to happen. You know, it is almost like there is some weird annual ritual that is bringing the Miami Dolphins franchise some really nasty karma, right? I mean, I can't think of what that could possibly be, but it does seem to be very, very real, and it seems like it might have struck again. You know, we have one more regular season game left in the NFL, and then those playoffs are going to be here, and it is going to be wild once again. Moving over to college football bowl games, we saw some funny things take place over there too. You know, after being left out of the college football playoff and then complaining about how it was totally and completely unfair, Florida State got a chance to prove that they belong with the big boys. Hey, it was a tough situation. The Seminoles were cruising along, and then starting quarterback Jordan Travis broke his leg, and with him out, FSU just didn't look the same. So the committee left them out of the Final Four, and FSU was understandably upset. They didn't lose a game. They just looked awful. Okay, so they got sent to the Orange Bowl. They get to play Georgia. By the way, another team that also had legitimate beef with being left out of the playoff, because Georgia lost one game in the conference championship to a very good team by a very small amount. Georgia could have been in that playoff too. And you know, FSU said prior to that game that if they beat Georgia, then we should consider them national champions. So more than 20 Florida State players sat the game out. Also, more than 20 players opted out for Georgia as well. And then Georgia went out and beat the brakes off the Seminoles by not 40, not 50, by 60. Not 55, not 58, 60. You know, Georgia had nearly 700 yards of offense to Florida State's 200. Hey, I'm not saying Florida State didn't get screwed by the system. Of course they did. But then they also screwed themselves by whining and then getting beat like Bishop Sycamore in the Orange Bowl. Not a good look, Florida State. If you're going to complain, at least bring it in the Orange Bowl. Finally, we got to the college football playoff games on Monday night. And hey, complain all you want about the playoff committee, but we got the best two games that we have ever had in college football playoff history. We've had one good game. We've never had two. And a lot of times we don't even get one. But first up, we had the number one Michigan Wolverines playing the number four Alabama Crimson Tide in the Rose Bowl. And that was a really fun game to watch. I don't know that it was a great game. Quarterback play was not very good. There were way too many mistakes, but it was a heavyweight chess match. Michigan actually pushed Alabama around up front all day, which was very surprising. We're not used to seeing the Crimson Tide get pushed around like that up front. But hey, head coach Nick Saban, he's going to fix that, right? So he did. He began using misdirection. He began using edge running plays. He began moving the pocket for quarterback Jalen Milroe. And pretty soon, here comes Bama. They held a 20-13 lead with just minutes left to play. But Michigan mounts a clutch drive. They tie the game. They go into overtime. And in overtime, the Wolverines get a quick touchdown right away. Okay, can Alabama answer? Alabama drives to the Michigan 3. And on fourth and goal, with the game in the balance, a few things happen that I want to talk about. One, Jalen Milroe got another bad snap from his center. That had been happening all day. Not sure why they couldn't correct it, but they couldn't. Two, go back and watch that replay. There was some action going to the wide side of the field on your camera. It'll be on the near side of the field. It almost looked like maybe a swing pass or a pitch play was coming to the left side of the field. But on the bad snap, Milroe decided to keep the ball instead and run up the gut right into the teeth of the defense. He was stopped for basically no gain. The game was over. And I know after the game, Nick Saban said, well, we thought we could score with Milroe keeping it. We changed the play a few times, but we thought that was our best option. But like I said, I've watched that play a few times. I believe that Milroe caught a bad snap. I think he panicked. Or he just made a bad read and kept it. And I think Nick Saban actually protected him by not saying, we had the right play called. He's an idiot for trying to keep it himself. But if you watch that replay again, you might end up agreeing with me. Michigan finally moves on past the first round. In the Sugar Bowl, we got the number 2 Washington Huskies showing that they can score some points on anyone in the country. The Huskies put up over 500 yards and 37 points on what is a very talented number 3 Texas team. And quarterback Michael Penix, I don't know, he might have made himself some big money because he's climbing up those draft boards with his play. Penix threw for 430 yards and 2 touchdowns. And I know that he had that knee injury as a freshman when he was still at Indiana, but I'm starting to think Michael Penix looks like the 3rd best quarterback in the country coming out in this draft. After Caleb Williams and Drake May, Penix has a way bigger arm than I think anyone realizes. And I think he's moving into the top 2 rounds of the NFL draft with his performances. Washington had to hold on late, but they beat Texas 37-31. Okay, so now this next Monday night, we will get number 1 Michigan versus number 2 Washington in the college football national championship game in Houston. So who's going to come out on top? Both teams are 14-0. Michigan is actually a 4.5-point favorite. And I think this has a chance to be a very good game because I think we're going to witness very different styles in this game. Michigan is going to run the ball. They're going to play very physical football. Washington, I think, is way more explosive offensively. They can come up with big plays. You know, I actually think Washington has a decided advantage at quarterback with Penix over J.J. McCarthy. I think they have an advantage at wide receiver. Unfortunately, football is won in the trenches. And I think that is the strength of this Michigan team. I expect running back Blake Corum to have a big night, and I expect Michigan to scrape out a tight win. And hey, if nothing else, if it comes down to that last kind of snap, like we saw against Alabama, I mean, we know Michigan already knows what play's coming, right?
Oh, no, you didn't.
Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you to make sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com, where we have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast, we have links to the video, and we have links to Daily Dose articles. If you didn't see the one that came on Tuesday, I wrote a little about what is going on with those Denver Broncos and the benching of Russell Wilson. Things are changing quickly here in Denver. But if you need to pick up some Daily Dose gear, we have links to that as well. You might need a t-shirt. You might need a sweatshirt. You might need a hoodie. You might need some office supplies. Make sure you stop by DailyDoseSports.com every week and check in with what is going on over there. Hey, today on the show, we are actually taking a look back at some of the sports figures that we have lost in the world of sports in 2023. And I'm telling you right now, we have had some great ones this year. We lost one of the best ever in the NFL, one of the toughest ever in the NBA, a great scorer in the NHL, and even one of the best race car drivers ever this year. We're going to discuss them and a few of their stories when we get back. Plus, we do also have a Daily Dose Top 5 for you. Don't go anywhere. You're going to want to make sure you stick around for that. So, you know, we started doing this a few years back, and I kind of explain it every year, but this isn't meant to be a sad podcast. But over the year, we lose a ton of people every single year. And it doesn't seem like the sports world gets as much attention sometimes as other worlds. Unless it's a big name, unless it's like a Kobe Bryant, the news cycle is so quick that we kind of forget who we lost over the previous year. And so we've kind of taken to it the end of the year or the beginning of the year, just taking a look back. Again, not really a memorial show, but more just to remember the contributions to the world of sports that we have had people make. And it never fails. I get an email or I get a message that says, I had no idea we lost them. And that is kind of why we do this. So here is a quick look at some of the sports figures that we lost in the year 2023. And we start off on January 1st because Art McNally was an American football executive who was the director of officiating in the NFL from 68 to 91. And before becoming a director, he served as a field judge and a ref in the NFL. He had a 22-year span where he officiated over 3,000 football, baseball, and basketball games. He even had a year as a ref in the NBA. In 2022, McNally became the first NFL game official to be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He was the oldest living member of the Football Hall of Fame at the age of 97. On January 11th, we lost Charles White, the 1979 Heisman Trophy winner who spent 9 seasons in the NFL after being selected out of USC in the 1980 draft. You know, Charles White is just the second player in Rose Bowl history out of 4 total to have been honored as player of the game 2 different times. White would play in the NFL for the Cleveland Browns and the Los Angeles Rams. He actually got the 1987 Comeback Player of the Year after kind of a disappointing start to his career, but he would end up rushing for over 3,000 yards and scoring 23 touchdowns. On January 26th, we lost Billy Packer, who was an American college basketball player, sportscaster, and author. Packer spent more than 3 decades working as a color analyst for television coverage of college hoops. He attended Wake Forest University. From 58 to 62, he played guard on the school's team for the last 3 years of college, because remember, at that time, freshmen couldn't play. But he led Wake to 2 ACC conference titles and took them to the Final Four in 62. After graduation, he tried out being an assistant coach, but then he got into the broadcasting business when he was asked to fill in as a color analyst, and he was picked up as a regular the next season. Billy Packer first worked in 1974 with NBC, and he covered every single NCAA men's basketball championship, including Final Fours, from 75 to 2008. Phenomenal career by Billy Packer. On January 30th, we lost Hall of Fame hockey player Bobby Hull. Bobby Hull was widely regarded as one of the greatest players all time. With his blonde hair, his speed, and his ability to take the puck from end to end, and not to mention the fact that he could shoot it at a really high velocity, Bobby Hull was named the Golden Jet. He played 23 years from 57 to 1980. He played in the NHL and he played in the WHA. He won the Hart Memorial Trophy as the NHL's most valuable player 2 times and the Art Ross Trophy as the leading scorer 3 times. He helped the Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup in 61, and he led the NHL in goals 7 times. That is the second most of any player in history. Bobby Hull was elected to the Hockey Hall of Fame back in 1983. Also in January, on the 30th, we lost Bobby Bethard, who is an American professional football executive. He was the GM for the Washington Redskins and the San Diego Chargers. Over 38 years in the NFL, his teams competed in 7 Super Bowls. They won 4 of them. He actually got his start with the Kansas City Chiefs, then with the Miami Dolphins, then the Redskins, and then the Chargers. Bobby Bethard was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame back in 2018. We fast forward to the month of February, where on February 5th, we lost Demetrius Caleb, who was a pretty good basketball player. Caleb helped the University of Michigan win the 1989 Men's Basketball Championship. He was a member of that 88-89 national team that included Glenn Rice, Terry Mills, Loy Vaught, Ramil Robinson, Sean Higgins, and of course, Rob Pelinka. As a member of the 90-91 team, he led the team in scoring, assists, and minutes. And you might not know this, Caleb did play a little bit in the NBA, but he actually appeared in two basketball movies, Blue Chips and Eddie. We lost Demetrius Caleb this year. On February 13th, we lost Conrad Dobler, who spent 10 seasons in the NFL with the Cardinals organization. He was a three-time Pro Bowl selection. Now, Dobler was a guard. He played next to the great Dan Dierdorf at tackle, and a number of times Dobler got a lot of notoriety for picking up unsportsmanlike penalties against opponents. He didn't care. He was proud of the fact that sometimes he pushed the rules a little bit. He actually played his college ball at the University of Wyoming and then was drafted in 72 by the St. Louis Cardinals. But he played 10 years, and the Cardinals had pretty good offensive lines during those times, especially for pass blocking, where they protected quarterback Jim Hart during that time. If you'd like evidence on how Dobler kind of reveled in his reputation, he had a quote that said this: "I see defensive linemen jump up to knock a pass down. If that happens near me, I punch them in the solar plexus. That gets their hands down pretty quick." On February 16th, we lost Tim McCarver. McCarver's impact on baseball was both on the field and in the broadcasting booth. McCarver played in MLB for 21 seasons, most notably with the St. Louis Cardinals, where he won two World Series rings. But then, after his playing career, he moved to the broadcast booth. He called games for MLB from 1980 until 2013. Now, you might remember McCarver for one specific incident, because during the 1992 NL Championship Series, McCarver criticized Atlanta Braves player Deion Sanders, who, of course, was also playing in the NFL. He was playing both baseball and football, and McCarver had said that maybe he needed to focus on one. Well, after Game 7 had concluded, the Braves had won, Sanders snuck up and dumped a bucket of ice water on McCarver three different times while he was interviewing people during the celebration. And after being doused for the third time, McCarver shouted at Sanders, "You're a real man, Deion, I'll say that." On February 26th, we lost Terry Holland, who was a college administrator as well as a basketball player and coach. Holland served as the head men's basketball coach at Davidson College from 69 to 74, but was way more memorable for the time he spent at the University of Virginia from 74 until 1990. Terry Holland had a coaching record of 418 and 216. Pretty impressive stuff. He was responsible, of course, for signing the nation's top-ranked high school basketball player. That's right, 7'4" Ralph Sampson, who went on to become a three-time Collegiate Player of the Year as a Virginia Cavalier. But during his time at Virginia, Terry Holland had an incredible record of 326 and 173. He was the winningest men's basketball coach in Virginia history until he was recently surpassed by Tony Bennett. He did take those Virginia teams to two different Final Four appearances in 81, 84, and they won the NIT title in 1980. We move on to the month of March, where we lost Otis Taylor on March 9th. Otis Taylor was a pretty good wide receiver who played in the NFL. He played for the Prairie View A&M Panthers in college and then was drafted by the Kansas City Chiefs, where he would play his entire career. Taylor's most memorable highlight from the season came in the fourth and final AFL-NFL World Championship game in Super Bowl IV. Taylor actually caught a pass from Len Dawson. He broke a tackle and ran down the sideline for 46 yards to close out the scoring in the third quarter. The Chiefs would go on to win 23-7. That was actually a pretty big upset at the time for the AFL to beat the NFL. "Otis made my job easy," is what Len Dawson said. If I got the pass to Otis, I knew he'd catch it. On March 11th, we lost a great coach in both the CFL and the NFL when we lost Bud Grant. Bud Grant was the head coach of the NFL's Minnesota Vikings for 18 years. He was the team's second and fourth head coach. He actually left for a while came back briefly, and he led them to 4 Super Bowl appearances, 11 division titles, and 1 league championship. Before coaching the Vikings, though, Bud Grant was the head coach of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for 10 years. They won the Grey Cup 4 different times. But what you might not know about Bud Grant, he went to the University of Minnesota, and he was a 3-sport athlete, football, basketball, and baseball. And after college, he actually played in the NBA for the Minneapolis Lakers, where he won the finals in 1950. Yeah, one of those fake banners that they're hanging up in LA. Yeah, Bud Grant was a part of that. He was elected to the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 83 and to the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1994. You know, I will always remember Bud Grant showing up for like a pregame recognition in the snow. It's freezing. He's like in his 90s and dude is wearing shirt sleeves. Bud Grant was a man. On March 12th, we lost Felton Spencer, who is a pretty good center, specifically in college. Spencer played 12 years in the NBA with stops at Utah, Orlando, Golden State, San Antonio, and the New York Knicks, but he was really good at the University of Louisville. Felton Spencer became the all-time field goal percentage leader. He made 63% of his shots at Louisville. Of course, he had to take over that position after Purvis Ellison had left to go to the NBA, but we lost Felton Spencer at the age of just 55. Also in March, we lost Joe Pepitone. Joe Pepitone was a first baseman and outfielder who played predominantly with the New York Yankees. Pepitone was a 3-time MLB All-Star, and he won 3 Gold Gloves. He spent 12 years in the major, and of course, he was a part of those pennant-winning teams in 63 and 64. But his exploits off the field sometimes were covered as much as what he did on the field. Dude had a huge personality. He was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. He had 2 younger brothers, and he was actually shot by a classmate at the age of 17 while still in high school. Get this, Pepitone didn't even press charges. In the same week, his father passed away from a stroke at the age of 39. But in 1985, Pepitone and 2 other men were arrested for running a red light. And when the car was pulled over, it was found they had 9 ounces of cocaine, 344 Quaaludes, a pistol, and about $6,300 in cash. He denied knowing about any of it, of course, but he spent a few months at Rikers Island Jail in 88. Pepitone passed away on March 12th. He was 82. On March 19th, we lost Willie Cager Jr. Now, Willie Cager was a college hoops player for that Texas Western team that won the 66 NCAA basketball championship over the University of Kentucky. He, of course, was coached by Don Haskins, and Texas Western was starting an all-black lineup against an all-white lineup. Cager had 8 points and 6 rebounds in that championship game, and the school's website described him as a very skilled low post player. Cager was nicknamed Scoops. Unfortunately, Scoops suffered from a heart murmur during that season. And when he came back, he actually didn't play that much. They had to kind of use him sparingly. You can imagine in those days, they would kind of put him in shifts and bring him back out. But, you know, due to his health, he never played as a professional, but he was a really good college player. We lost Willie Cager back in March. On March 21st, we lost a really, really good NBA player and one of the toughest guys to ever play in the NBA. Because Willis Reed was a 7-time NBA All-Star. He was a 5-time All-NBA selection. And he was a 2-time NBA champion in 70 and 73. He was actually voted the NBA Finals MVP both of those times. Willis Reed was named to the NBA's 50th and 75th anniversary teams. He spent 10 years in the NBA, and of course, he famously played in Game 7 with a torn thigh muscle that he had suffered in a Game 5. But following his playing career, Reed would move into coaching, first in college and then the NBA. He would eventually end up in the front office as an executive. But you know, Willis Reed, he's one of the toughest NBA players ever. In 1966, there was a scuffle with the Los Angeles Lakers, and Willis Reed stood on the court and challenged any Laker to come and fight him. No one did. He passed away at the age of 80. On March 31st, we lost John Brockington, who was a running back in the NFL with the Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs. He was a first-round draft choice out of Ohio State and was actually the NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year in 1971. Brockington became the first NFL player to ever rush for 1,000 or more yards in each of his first three seasons, which he did with Green Bay. And, you know, they say he had a running style that was just based on strength. He was a power running back. He would lower his head. He would run you over. He was one of the first running backs that could run you over or break it outside and beat you with his speed as well. On April 8th, we lost Mickey Slaughter, who played in the AFL a little bit, and he was a pretty good college player as well. But Mickey Slaughter played his college ball at Louisiana Tech, where he was a three-time all-conference quarterback. He then was drafted in the seventh round by the Denver Broncos in 1963. He actually played just 4 years in his career, but here's the key about Mickey Slaughter. Slaughter is one of just three players to ever wear the number 7 in Broncos history. Slaughter was the first, followed by Craig Morton in the 70s and 80s, and then, of course, John Elway, and that number has now been retired. Also in April, we lost Dave Wilcox, who was a linebacker for the San Francisco 49ers from 64 to 74. He was selected to play in 7 Pro Bowls. He's pretty good. He had played his college ball at Oregon, but spent 11 seasons with the San Francisco 49ers. On April 27th, we lost MLB's Dick Groat, who was an 8-time All-Star shortstop and a 2-time World Series champion in MLB. Dick Groat rates as one of the most accomplished two-sport athletes in American sports history. He was an All-American in both baseball and basketball, and one of only 13 players to actually play both at the professional level. We move up to the month of May, where on May 6th, we lost Vida Blue. Vida was a left-handed pitcher in Major League Baseball from 69 to 86, and he was an integral member of the Oakland Athletics dynasty that won 3 straight World Series from 72 to 74. The legendary left-hander also became the youngest MVP in Major League Baseball history in 1971. He also picked up a Cy Young Award and was a 6-time All-Star during a 17-year career. On May 8th, we lost Joe Capp. He played his college ball with the Cal Golden Bears, and then he played professional in the Canadian Football League with the Calgary Stampeders and the BC Lions, but then he went down and played with the Minnesota Vikings and the Boston Patriots. But with the Vikings, he actually led them to the 1969 NFL Championship game, and he was one of those guys. I don't know if he's a great thrower, but Joe Capp was a tough dude, and he was not afraid to tuck the ball and run a little bit. We lost Joe Capp on May 8th. On May 9th, we lost Denny Crum, who was the coach at the University of Louisville from 1971 to 2001. He compiled an amazing record, winning nearly 70% of his games. During that time, he had 675 wins and won 2 NCAA championships and had 6 Final Four visits. Denny Crum was 86. On May 18th, we lost one of the greatest running backs in NFL history when we lost Jim Brown, who is not just a phenomenal player. He was also a civil rights activist. He even became an actor. He played for the Cleveland Browns from 57 to 65 and was invited to the Pro Bowl every single year he was in the league. He was the MVP 3 times. He won an NFL championship with the Browns in 1964. He led the league in rushing 8 out of 9 years. And then he suddenly just retired. But one interesting thing about Jim Brown, you might not know, he's also considered by many to possibly be the greatest lacrosse player ever. Brown was so dominant in lacrosse, the lacrosse rules were actually changed. And that was when they required a lacrosse player to keep their stick in constant motion while carrying the ball because Brown was so strong, when he had the ball, no one could get it away from him. He totally dominated while at Syracuse playing lacrosse. And then, of course, after his NFL playing career, he was a civil rights activist and did a little bit of acting as well. On May 24th, we lost Jerry Krause, not the former Chicago Bulls general manager that was involved in the Jordan years, but a very, very good American college basketball coach. Jerry Krause was the director of basketball operations for Gonzaga from 85 to 2015. And before joining Gonzaga, he worked as a basketball coach at high schools in Iowa and right here in my home state, Loveland, Colorado. But after coaching in high school, he was an assistant coach at Colorado State College, which would eventually be the University of Northern Colorado. And primarily, he coached at Eastern Washington. But you know, Jerry Krause has written some of the greatest basketball coaching books that you will ever find. We lost Jerry Krause on May 24th. On June 10th, we lost AFL and NFL kicker Jim Turner, who played for the Denver Broncos and the New York Jets. He was actually a part of that Super Bowl III win during his time with the Jets. You know, Turner was one of the last straight-on kickers wearing those black high tops. Turner wasn't a distance guy, but he was pretty accurate from 40 and in. And one of my greatest memories as a kid was seeing Jim Turner catch a pass on a fake field goal attempt against the then Oakland Raiders for a touchdown. On June 19th, we lost a guy that played in the NFL for 13 years with Arizona, San Francisco, and Pittsburgh, where he actually helped them win a Super Bowl. But we lost former Colorado State University linebacker Clark Hagans. You know, Hagans was actually a walk-on at CSU, and he eventually earned himself a scholarship. He still holds the Colorado State all-time sack record to this day with 33 sacks during his time in Fort Collins. On June 27th, we lost quarterback Ryan Mallett, who you might remember as one of the best quarterbacks ever to come out of the University of Arkansas. He actually began his career at Michigan and then transferred to Arkansas. Mallett would eventually make it to the NFL. He started 26 games as a third round selection by the New England Patriots. He spent 7 seasons in the NFL, but at the age of 35, he actually drowned off the Florida coast in a dangerous riptide. On July 7th, we lost Nikki McCray Penson, who was a 2-time Olympic gold medal winner in women's basketball. She was a great player for Pat Summitt as a Tennessee Volunteer. McCray Penson spent 9 seasons in the WNBA before moving into the coaching ranks for a 15-year career, and she was part of a national championship at South Carolina under head coach Don Staley in 2017 as an assistant. She would then get a head coaching job at Old Dominion and at Mississippi State, but she had to step down for health reasons due to breast cancer. Her latest coaching job was at Rutgers, but McCray Penson died on July 7th. On July 25th, we lost Johnny Lujack, who was an American football quarterback and safety who played for the Chicago Bears in the NFL. Of course, he played his college ball at Notre Dame, where he won the Heisman in 47. But Johnny Lujack, pretty good athlete. He lettered in 4 different sports at Notre Dame, and then actually came back after his playing days to assist head coach Frank Leahy a little bit also at Notre Dame. Johnny Lujack passed away at the age of 98. We move to August, where on August 9th, we lost Sean Dawkins, who was a wide receiver for 9 years in the NFL. In college, he played for the Cal Golden Bears and was an All-American. Eventually, Sean Dawkins would play for the Indianapolis Colts, the New Orleans Saints, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Jacksonville Jaguars. On August 11th, we lost Alex Cole, who was an MLB outfielder. He spent 7 years in the majors. He played for 5 different teams, including our inaugural season here in Colorado with the Rockies, but Alex Cole passed at the age of just 58. On August 19th, we lost Maxie Bowen, who was a linebacker in the NFL for the Philadelphia Eagles, the Los Angeles Rams, and the Washington Redskins. Bowen played college football for Georgia Tech, where he played both center and linebacker. He played 12 years in the NFL. He was named to the Pro Bowl in 9 of those seasons. He actually went on to be a pretty good coach too. Ballin would eventually take over at Cornell and lead them to the Ivy League championship in 1988, which they hadn't been to in nearly 20 years. On August 31st, we lost Gil Brandt, who was one of the pioneers of the Cowboys franchise rise from the 60s to the days, you know, when they actually won games. He was the vice president of player personnel with the Cowboys for 28 years. He was part of two Super Bowl wins and was the driving force behind a lot of the analytics that we use today. Gil Brandt was one of the first people to use computers to enter number grades when evaluating prospects coming into the league. Gil Brandt passed away on August 31st at the age of 91. Okay, coming back, we need to finish up those we lost in 2023, but then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. What will you remember from the year 2023 in the world of sports? We're going to give you our five most memorable stories in the world of sports when we get back. So let's finish off with some of the people that we did lose in the world of sports in the year 2023. And we are now on to the month of September. And on September 4th, we lost Wilma Briggs. Wilma Briggs was an American left fielder in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, and she played from 1948 through 1954. Now, Briggs was just 5'4". She was 138 pounds. She batted left-handed, but threw right-handed. She led the league in home runs in 53 and ranked second in all-time home runs for that league. But, you know, they say that while the film does not actually use names, that the Tom Hanks movie, A League of Their Own, was actually based on this league, and that Briggs may have been the basis for the main character. Mike Williams was a wide receiver for 5 seasons in the NFL. He played college football for the Syracuse Orange and was selected by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the 4th round of the 2010 NFL draft. He also played in the NFL for the Buffalo Bills and for the Kansas City Chiefs. But you know, after his career, Williams worked in construction in the Tampa Bay area. And back in August, he was actually injured in a worksite accident where a steel beam fell on his head. And though he initially returned home, he was admitted to a hospital in Tampa the next day, and things just went downhill fast. He was later reported to be paralyzed from the waist down, and his health just continued to deteriorate. Mike Williams passed away on September 12th. He was only 36 years old. Brooks Robinson was nicknamed the Human Vacuum Cleaner and was an iconic staple for the Baltimore Orioles. He held down the hot corner during his 23-year career and was considered by many to be the greatest defensive third baseman of all time. Robinson spent his entire MLB run with those Baltimore Orioles. He won 2 World Series titles in 66 and in 70. And his 2,870 career games at third base not only exceeded the closest player by nearly 700 games when he retired, but also remained the most games by any player in MLB history at a single position. He was an 18-time All-Star. He won an incredible 16 Gold Gloves and was the AL MVP in 1964. We move on to the month of October. And on October 1st, Russ Francis, who was a tight end for 13 seasons in the NFL, passed away. He played for the New England Patriots and the San Francisco 49ers, and bizarrely, he was also a professional wrestler. But Russ Francis finished his NFL career with 393 receptions. He had over 5,000 yards and had 40 touchdowns. He was inducted into the Oregon Sports Hall of Fame in 1993. But you know, he was a 3-time Pro Bowler. But following the 1980 season, Russ Francis actually opted to retire from professional football because the Patriots wouldn't give him his bonus. He made the Pro Bowl, but then he couldn't play in the Pro Bowl, so they wouldn't give him the bonus. And then when the team tried to cancel his teammate Darrell Stingley's medical insurance after Stingley had been paralyzed by Jack Tatum 2 years earlier, Francis has had enough. He was roommates with Stingley. He said it was tough to play after that, so he retired. But he actually came back after a year off. He joined the San Francisco 49ers, and he managed to win a Super Bowl in 1984. Also on October 1st, we lost Tim Wakefield, who was a legendary knuckleball pitcher. He spent 19 years in the majors with the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Boston Red Sox, the latter of which he was actually part of for 29 years as a player and a person working within the organization. He was a two-time World Series champion, and when he retired at age 45 after 19 years in Major League Baseball, Tim Wakefield was the oldest active player in the major leagues. On October 5th, we lost one of, if not the greatest, linebacker in NFL history when Dick Butkus passed away. The third overall pick out of Illinois back in 1965, he spent his entire career with the Chicago Bears, and he racked up six all-NFL selections, two Defensive Player of the Years, and eight Pro Bowls. Dick Butkus is widely regarded as one of the greatest and most intimidating linebackers in NFL history. Butkus is credited for having defined the middle linebacker position, and I mean, he's still viewed as kind of the gold standard for middle linebackers. You want proof? In his honor, the Butkus Award recognizes the best outstanding linebacker in college football even today. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 79, and his number 51 jersey was retired by the Chicago Bears. Walt Garrison was a fullback for the Dallas Cowboys. He played his college ball at Oklahoma State, and he was actually named to the Pro Bowl in 1972 when he was with the Cowboys. You know, Walt Garrison, he's a tough guy. During that 72 season, he actually suffered a cut that required 16 stitches in one of his fingers while he was doing his favorite hobby away from the football field. Yeah, he was whittling. He was named to the Pro Bowl after picking up 784 yards and seven touchdowns, even though he was kind of part of a three running back tier in Dallas. And you know, he played in that Pro Bowl with a huge gash in his face that he had from wrestling steers in his spare time. You know, Dallas Cowboy quarterback Don Meredith explained Garrison's dependability with this quote: "If it was third down and you needed 4 yards, you get the ball to Walt Garrison and he'd get you five. And if it was third down and you needed 20 yards, you get the ball to Walt Garrison and by God, he'd get you five." Walt Garrison passed away on October 11th. On October 28th, we had an absolutely horrifying story in hockey. As Adam Johnson was playing in the Elite Ice Hockey League in the United Kingdom, and this is a guy that had actually played a little bit with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but during COVID, he went over to Europe and stayed over there. Well, on October 28th, Johnson collided with another player on the ice, and the other player's skate cut Johnson's neck. He actually bled out at the arena. Now, Johnson was a Minnesota native, and he died from his injuries right there at the age of 29. 17 days after the incident, South Yorkshire police announced the arrest of the man that did the cutting with his skate on suspicion of manslaughter in Johnson's death. That is still under investigation, but they think that maybe he kind of did it on purpose. Ugly, ugly incident on October 28th. On October 30th, we lost Frank Howard, who at 6'7", he weighed more than 250 pounds during his playing days. Frank Howard was known as the Capital Punisher and the Washington Monument. He spent his career with the Dodgers and with the Washington Senators / Texas Rangers. He won the 1960 Rookie of the Year Award with LA, as well as the World Series in 63. He was a four-time All-Star and led the league once in home runs during that time. Following his playing career, he turned to coaching, and he spent time with the Brewers, the Yankees, the Mets, and the Devil Rays. But Howard passed away at the age of 87. We move on to the month of November, and on November 1st, we witnessed the passing of Bob Knight. He was controversial at times. He was one of the most prolific basketball coaches in the game, though, college or pro. Bob Knight won over 900 games during his career. He coached at Army, Indiana, and Texas Tech. He won 3 NCAA championships with Indiana, but his outbursts were as much of his lore as his successes. You know, Bob Knight was a complex person. He demanded discipline and yet didn't always show it himself. He could be the nicest person, and those who loved him will never change their opinion of that. And yet he could also be a bit of a bully. But you cannot argue with his success and the fact that his players graduated. His programs were always above reproach in terms of like violations. They didn't have them. He ran a spotless program. And then again, he could also fling a chair across the floor. Bobby Knight, the general, was 83 when he passed away. On November 2nd, we lost Walter Davis. Davis spent 15 years in the NBA. He earned All-Star nods in 6 of those years. He was a first-round pick out of North Carolina back in 1977, and dude could just fill it up. Davis was the 1978 NBA Rookie of the Year, but the biggest impact on his NBA legacy came in 83 when Davis set a record after scoring 34 straight points before he finally missed a shot. Walt Davis passed away on November 2nd. On November 20th, we lost Willie Hernandez, who was a left-handed relief pitcher that was one of the greatest in the game. He held the rare distinction of winning the American League MVP and the Cy Young Award in the same year. That was in 1984. He also ended that year with a World Series win for the Detroit Tigers, in which he recorded the final out. Willie Hernandez was a native of Puerto Rico, and he spent time with the Chicago Cubs and the Philadelphia Phillies as well. On November 23rd, we lost defensive end Harold Hasselbeck, who played a little bit in the Canadian Football League, but also played in the NFL. He played 7 seasons in the league for the Denver Broncos from 94 to 2000, and he actually won 2 Super Bowls in Denver. He was a starter on one of those teams. Hasselbeck played his college ball for the Washington Huskies after attending high school near Vancouver. And you know, after retiring as a player, he became a high school football coach, but passed away at the age of just 56 due to a rare form of cancer. We move on to December, where on December 9th, we lost tight end Frank Wycheck, who played college football for Maryland. But as a professional, he played 11 seasons for the Washington Redskins at the time and the Tennessee Titans, where, of course, he was the player that threw the lateral pass in the Music City Miracle. Wycheck had also spent time as a professional wrestler, and he was the color commentator on the Tennessee Titans radio network from 2005 to 2016. Wycheck actually fell in his own home and hit his head and passed away from those injuries at the age of 52. On December 14th, we lost George McGinnis, who played college basketball for Indiana. He actually was a third-team All-American in 71, and then he played in the ABA with the Indiana Pacers. He also did play a little bit in Denver. McGinnis was named the ABA Most Valuable Player back in 75, and he won 2 ABA titles with Indiana during that time. When he went to the NBA, he was also a 3-time All-Star with the Philadelphia 76ers. It was just on December 17th that we lost Eric Montross, who played in the NBA for 8 seasons with the Boston Celtics, the Dallas Mavericks, the New Jersey Nets, the Philadelphia 76ers, the Detroit Pistons, and the Toronto Raptors. Now, he was born in Indianapolis, and he played for Lawrence North High School, which is actually a big-time school in the state of Indiana, and then went on to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where he played for the Tar Heels and Dean Smith. Of course, Montross won that title at UNC in 93. He ended up going back and doing color commentary for Tar Heels games, but he passed away of cancer that had been recently diagnosed at the age of 52. We finish off our list today on December 31st, the final day of the year, where we lost stock car racing legend Cale Yarborough at the age of 84. You know, Yarborough is one of the most successful NASCAR drivers ever. He has 83 Cup wins and 3 championships. Yarbrough won those 3 championships in 3 straight seasons from 76 to 78. And of course, one of Yarbrough's most famous moments in NASCAR came right after he won his 3rd and final championship. He was racing for the lead with Donnie Allison. This is back in 79 at Daytona. And the two drivers collided on the backstretch. Their cars went sliding through the infield. And after they climbed from their cars in the infield, they started fighting. Donnie Allison's brother Bobby joined the fray. Richard Petty actually went on to win the race. But that fight was a signature moment for NASCAR, because it was primarily just a regional sport until 79. That race, though, was televised live from start to finish for the first time. And you know, NASCAR is still showing that fight today and trying to drum up business out of it. But you know, Yarbrough is one of just 7 drivers with more than 80 Cup wins. He's tied with Jimmy Johnson for the 6th most wins, behind Richard Petty, David Pearson, Jeff Gordon, Bobby Allison, and Darrell Waltrip. We lost a very good driver and a very tough guy this year when we lost Cale Yarbrough. Now, like I said, we don't go back and look at these athletes and these former sports figures as a sad end of the year thing. That's not what this is about. It's more, sometimes we just kind of forgot that we lost these players, that we lost these greats. And it just kind of helps sometimes at the end of the year, or in this case, at the beginning of the new year, to go back and just kind of remember some of the great sports figures that we did lose over the length of the year. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. So, when you remember the year 2023 in sports, what are you going to remember? Maybe it is the Georgia Bulldogs winning back-to-back titles in college football, or the Texas Rangers beating the Arizona Diamondbacks in the World Series. Maybe it is Connecticut winning the men's hoops title, or maybe, like me, it is the Denver Nuggets winning the NBA title. But what is it that you will remember from the past year in sports? Because today, we are counting down the top 5 most memorable moments in sports from the year 2023. So let's start off at number 5. And this one is obviously pretty recent. It feels really fresh to us. But in what will be the final year of the college football playoff, we got some pretty serious controversy. Because the undefeated Florida State Seminoles were dropped from the top 4 teams that actually make it to the college football playoff, not because they had lost a game, but because they had looked so awful without their starting quarterback, Jordan Travis, who had broken his leg late in the season. It has now gotten so bad that Florida State has sued their own conference, the ACC, over the grant of rights, basically saying that the conference has held them back. Now, that opens up the path for them to leave the conference and possibly join the SEC, or I guess maybe the Big 12, which I said was coming a long time ago. We knew Florida State doesn't want to be in the ACC. Now, Congress has talked about getting involved in this, and there was even talk that Florida State might not play in their Orange Bowl game. Hey, I feel bad for Florida State this year. I really do. But the committee did get it right. The problem is, there are only 4 spots, and there are 5 major conferences. But Florida State getting jilted at the college football playoff altar? Yeah, we're going to remember it. And it comes in today at number 5. We move next to number 4. And we once again go with a little bit of recency bias. And yet, when the Los Angeles Dodgers managed to sign the best player in all of Major League Baseball, yeah, it's going to be a moment that we remember from this year. Shohei Ohtani signed the biggest contract in sports history. 10 years and $700 million. And then he also agreed to defer salary so that the Dodgers can go get even more talent. And they have been busy. They have been doing exactly that. Now, do these deals guarantee that the Dodgers are going to win it all? No, of course not. Not at all. Hey, The Angels have had two of the best players in the league on their roster the last few years. They can't even make the playoffs. But the Dodgers are going out and they're spending more money than some teams even have on just a couple of players. And we're going to remember it from 2023, and it comes in today at number four. So we reach the number three most memorable sports story of the year that was 2023. And we go back to March Madness, where the Connecticut Huskies won the title after being a number four seed. They knocked off the number five seed San Diego State Aztecs in the final. Hey, it was a surprising final. I don't know how many people actually predicted those two making the final. But the biggest surprise of the tournament, once again, had to be that for just the second time in tournament history, we saw a number 16 seed upset a number one seed as the Fairleigh Dickinson Knights beat Texas Southern in that play-in round and then went on to beat the number one seeded Purdue Boilermakers. Now, going into the tournament, did Purdue have some flaws? Sure they did. Because while they have 7'4" monster Zach Edey, we knew their guards could struggle at times. But Fairleigh Dickinson? Come on. Be serious. After over 30 years of the NCAA tournament never having a 16 beat a 1, we have now seen it happen twice in the past 5 years, and I have a feeling we might keep seeing it because there is so much parity in college hoops. A 16 beating a 1 in March Madness comes in today on our list at number 3. So we arrive at number two today, and one of the stories that we are no doubt going to remember is once again in the world of college sports. Kids, college sports are changing, and I'm talking about massive changes. The conference that has produced 11 national championships in football, 24 in basketball when you count the men and the women, is ending. Because the Pac-12 has collapsed and it is going away. You know, that league, it's just been so poorly managed. Their TV network was a disaster. And then, no one really wants to talk about it, but they allowed COVID to shut them down completely. And I mean, I know of one sports podcast by some bumpkin from Broomfield, Colorado, that called that then. And somehow the powers that be couldn't figure that out. A little bit bizarre. But we saw USC and UCLA announce they were going to jump to the Big Ten. And then Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah said they were going to go to the Big 12. And then Oregon and Washington were also going to go to the Big 10. Now they're talking about Cal and Stanford going to the ACC, which, I mean, makes perfect sense because that conference is awful. So, yeah, they'll fit right in. But you know, with Oklahoma and Texas joining the SEC this next year, we're getting down to three or four super conferences. And this is just turning into a full-blown minor league system. College sports are changing. Will it be for the better? I mean, I hope so. I have some real concerns, but I hope so. But the Pac-12 collapsing and the college sports landscape changing completely comes in today on our list at number two. So we arrive at the number one thing that I'm going to remember from the year that was 2023 in the world of sports. And where else could we go? Because the National Football League is the most dominant sports league in America. And it's not really all that close. I mean, a Thursday night garbage game gets better ratings than an MLB World Series Game 7 or an NBA Finals Game 7. Or a Stanley Cup Final, Game 7. The NFL, here in America, it's king. Yet, the NFL is kind of going through a bit of growing pains right now. Because the league has decided to kind of muddle their rules a little bit and ask their 80-year-old referees to do way too much. And as a result, what do we end up talking about far too often? The NFL officiating. Remember, Super Bowl 57 was a great game. Eagles and Chiefs, it came down to the wire, but what do most of us remember? a phantom defensive holding call. And, you know, just a few weeks ago, it was the Kansas City Chiefs complaining about an offsides call against their offense, which is actually pretty rich because the Chiefs complaining about a call, I mean, they've benefited more than anyone lately, and yet it comes back on them now. You know, the NFL referees are making their presence felt far too often. And unfortunately, it is going to be one of the things that we remember from 2023. We will see if that league can figure some things out and correct it. Otherwise, I think they're going to drive some people away. And that is not a good sign for the NFL. But those are the stories we are going to remember from 2023. Hey, next week on the Daily Dose, I've got something special for you because the NFL playoffs are nearly here. We are going to be breaking down those NFL playoffs, picking every single game right through the Super Bowl and letting you know what to expect. So make sure you stop by the Daily Dose next week and make sure you let a friend know to do the same. Hey, I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
Oh, no, you didn't.